This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm glad you're here to join us as we have finally finished up actual NBA basketball with the harrowing, thrilling finish to the 2016 NBA Finals, which was won by the Cleveland Cavaliers. Yes, I said that right. They beat the Golden State Warriors with a 3-1 series comeback, finishing it off with a road win in Game 7 in Oracle Arena. We have a lot to talk about on top of that, along with the NBA draft. We're gonna pass up all of that, kind of talk about what's going on with that, and then we're going to talk about some free agency. But before we even touch any of that, I want to bring in my co-host and the guy who's been with me throughout this entire season, Adam Murray. Adam, this is kind of it.
Finally, after, you know, a two-hour marathon session last week and then just a whole long season.
Yeah, well, the draft is, you know, because we were determined to go through both rounds, so we knew that one was we were going to be in for a little bit of a long one, you know. But, you know, it was kind of tough for the playoffs because, you know, based on schedules and when you can speak, you know, being able – there were so many of them that went seven games. Particularly, there were two with the Raptors that went seven games in the first round and then the second round, which extended the playoffs to about as long as it possibly could be. And then, obviously, with the Warriors in the conference finals and the finals, you know, 3-1 series comebacks both ways – and then one, you know, one where they were the ones making the comeback, and then they were on the receiving end of it the other time. So it's gonna be. It was fascinating. You know, it caused a little bit of stress for us at times.
Yeah, it was. Oh, this should be done in five. Oh wait, we're at game seven. No, this was supposed to be. There were supposed to be sweeps, uneventful. Let's just get it done. But you know, Overall, it was. Not as crazy as a season as everyone expected it was. Everything sort of played out the way the right teams made the playoffs, the wrong teams made
the teams that we thought would play in the finals played in the finals. I think the only mild surprise, I don't even think the Raptors getting to the conference finals was that much of a surprise. The mild surprise was that the Spurs weren't there because they lost to a Thunder team that just got really hot in the postseason. And then obviously the Thunder giving the Warriors problems. Going into the playoffs, even after the first two games, even though a lot of people were predicting a Warriors win, I still thought Cleveland had a really good chance, like a pretty good chance. They just had to have a couple of things go their way. And, you know, fortunately for them, you know, some non-basketball related and then some basketball related, they had a couple of dominoes fall in their place. And then they went to work.
That's what the, you know, you have to rely on luck, whether it be certain players, not, you know, getting kicked out for a game, the right matchup, injuries, as, you know, as hard as they are, it's good for the other team.
Mm-hmm. So, well, let's kind of isolate some of those parts of the NBA Finals, since that was the first thing that, this is sort of a three-prong episode. We're going to, you know, keep it casual, not go too long about things and, you know, over-digest the NBA draft and free agency. We, you know, for off-season previews, you can go to any of our Netflix and chill episodes that we had previously. We talked extensively about the NBA Finals in our series preview. We're going to just try to keep our recaps brief because, you know, there really wasn't much to talk about until Game 4. You know, every game, it was well known every game until Game 7 was a blowout, but it doesn't mean that the series was like heavy on moments and memories, because there was a lot of really, you know, momentous stuff that happened throughout the series, even in the early blowouts. But the first four games, you know, until Golden State won that game in Cleveland, there really wasn't much to write home about.
I would even just say up to Game 7, there was nothing. They were both every game sort of fell the way it would. And if it wasn't a blowout, it was, well, it, they kept, technically the score was close, but it was really not much of a competition.
Game five for me was memorable. I know the final score was 112-97 in favor of Cleveland, but the fact that Golden State dropped one at home, I know they lost to the Thunder in game one in the conference finals, but just the way that they lost, how bad they looked in the second half, how bad their defense was, and then Bogut's injury along with Draymond not being there, and then LeBron and Kyrie going for 41. Let me say this. LeBron's line was 41, 16, 7 assists, 3 steals, and 3 blocks. That's amazing, okay? Kyrie Irving's performance might have been the best performance in the entire finals in that one specific game. Could you dispute that, or was it LeBron in the last two or three games?
I would say LeBron game 7 was pretty much the that was it, yeah.
Now, he was 9 of 24 shooting. So a lot of people would say, well, you know, he wasn't super efficient. You know, that was his big knock in the 2015 finals. His numbers were staggeringly great. They were even better if you'd look at averages compared to this last finals, even though his averages in this finals were still just as incredible. The difference was that in 2015, he wasn't very efficient because they lost Kyrie to the injury with the kneecap. They lost Kevin Love earlier in the postseason to a shoulder injury. The only guys he could really rely on for shooting for offense were Timofey Mozgov, which is just unbelievable to even say out of your, put the words out of your mouth. And then there's J.R. Smith and maybe Iman Shumpert. So he had to carry a heavier load. He looked like he got a little tired down the stretch. And it kind of showed when the Warriors eliminated them, even though the averages for LeBron were greater. With this one, he was much more efficient. So even when he didn't shoot well in that game 7, even though he made a couple of mid-range jump shots and a couple of threes, it seemed like he put his imprint on the game, like everywhere, especially on the defensive end. Just describe defensively what LeBron was able to do in those last three games.
Basically, LeBron, it seemed to turn back the clock like, what was it, 4 or 5 years? That was stuff we hadn't seen from him, you know, back in his first.
It was like he was playing center field. Like, I mean, he was looking at, he was looking for steals. He was looking for bad passes. He was switching everything. If he had to guard Curry, he would guard Curry. If he had to guard Draymond Green, he would guard him. You know, the one leak was that Draymond Green was getting open for those threes when LeBron was kind of isolated on him because LeBron was helping off of Curry and Thompson, but that's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's nothing you could do about that. So, you know, the thing is, defensively, there were points, though, where it seemed like when they were going to the paint, the Warriors just looked petrified.
The Warriors, they got off their game plan when, you know, when Draymond goes out for the one game, okay, you need to change it up. Bogut goes out. Well, now you have your small ball lineup that you relied on, but then you can't sub out of that, so you're stuck with it. You can't change the pace at all, and then just, well, we don't know what to do because, you know, the bigs got a little bigger.
The thing with the Warriors is that, you know, Charles Barkley got a lot of flack when the Warriors won the championship because he always said jump shooting teams can't win an NBA championship, and they did win the NBA championship, and they had an offense that a lot of people tried to copycat, and it's the new way of for the NBA style of play. Everybody wants to shoot threes. Even Cleveland was just killing it from the three-point line leading into the finals. But it did seem like some of the words that he was, you know, criticizing them with rang true in the finals. The Golden State Warriors, their two-point field goal percentage efficiency just sank in that finals, whether it was LeBron, whether it was Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. I think Kevin Love got a little bit too much flack in that finals because I thought his interior presence was actually pretty good, even if he wasn't registering, you know, on the stat sheet with rebounds and blocks and points. I thought Thompson and Love being in there, you know, as, you know, together, rebounding, boxing out, helping out with team rebounding, I thought that made Kerr a little nervous. And when Bogut went out with the knee injury, which was enormous, I didn't think a Bogut's absence would be that felt that closely, but it was. But it seemed like, you know, to kind of wrap up the whole point, it seemed like they did turn into a jump shooting team, that they abandoned the two-point, their two-point game for the three-point game. They took 41 threes in that game 7.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. Is you shouldn't be – at no point should you be taking 41 threes in a game, period. And they just – you know, your shots aren't. Last year, they hit every shot, everything, you know.
Well, against Oklahoma City, you know, in those last two games, they took nothing but threes. Their two-point percentage was awful. They just made the threes was the big difference. Cleveland's three-point defense after game four where Golden State blistered them with 17 threes, after that, Golden State just could not get going from the three-point line. Was that just dumb luck or just a team not being hot at the time? Or did Cleveland do something?
No, it was just they weren't hot at the time. It's just the law of averages. Eventually, if you shoot 10 for 10, you're going to come back down after a while, and they did. And, you know, people are getting ready to jump on Steph Curry. Oh, he was horrible. No, his stat line was just good. His stat line was really good. It's just people now expect 50-point games, 15 out of 20 three-pointers from him every game.
So you think Curry was good in the finals?
Yeah, you don't?
No, I thought he was very inefficient. Like, I thought, well, when you compare him with the best player, who was LeBron, it looks bad. You know, because LeBron was so good almost the entire finals. I mean, I can't really pinpoint the worst game he had. The worst game he had was probably game two, LeBron, when he had 19, 8, 9, and 4 steals. You know, and that was the game where they got blown out by like 30-something points. But for Curry, you know, after game four when he had 38 points, he was just there, you know? And then the one other game he played well, he was in foul trouble. He never put his impact on the game. LeBron just took over the game.
Well, it's not even put his impact on the game. LeBron can do everything. Curry, we know, is just a jump shooter. He's kind of one-dimensional. The problem is, the one dimension he has is superior to everyone else's. So, like I said, he wasn't terrible. His line was good. It's just, well, you're a shooter and you're sort of shooting average. Well, you need somebody else to pick up the slack. And you saw, you know, Draymond in game seven had that huge game, but nobody else did anything.
Yeah, 32 points, 15 rebounds, 9 assists, and 2 steals, including 6 threes. He only missed 1 minute of play, which was the same amount of time LeBron played in that game seven. Does that, maybe this one might sound crazy. Is Green just as indispensable as Curry, or Curry's the most indispensable one?
Curry's the most indispensable. Green is just beneath him.
Like, without Green, they can't win an NBA championship. I mean, let's be serious. Without either of the three, they couldn't win an NBA championship.
Without Green, they have no front court.
Mm-hmm. And that showed in game five.
I think you could do without Thompson, and you put another shooter in there. I don't see much of a fall-off.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Draymond, he is your front court, and Curry, he is your back court. You do without either one of those, you're sort of sunk.
Okay. Now, for these games where there's high scoring, like, you know, for a 7-game finals to be high scoring, we got to go a ways back because, you know, in the 90s, there was only one game seven, and that was the Knicks and the Rockets. And that was sort of a rock fight. That was the infamous OJ finals where the Bronco chase was on at the same time as game five in the Garden, but the Rockets won the series. We're going to have to go all the way back to maybe 88 or 84. 88 was when the Lakers played the Pistons and the Lakers won at home. And then the 84 was the Celtics and the Lakers, the first time Bird and Magic played in the finals, and the Celtics won that one. High scoring, but the one thing you notice if you look at those series is that almost all of them were blowouts until we got to game. Well, you know what? I got to take that back because in 84, there were only two close games. One was game two in the Garden. That was the Gerald Henderson game. And then there was game four in L.A., which went into overtime, which Bill Simmons always calls like the best game he's ever seen. And then in 88, game six and seven in L.A. were the really tight ones. You know, game six was the Isaiah Thomas game. Game seven was just a very close game where the crowd runs into the fans run the court before the game's even over when the Pistons are only down 3 points, which is like a travesty of justice. But let me ask you this. For this finals, you had pretty much a lot of games that were, you know, all 10-point winning margins or more throughout the entire finals. It's never happened in the finals up to this point, I believe. And then we finally got a close game. But let me ask you this. Just because we got that close game and because it was game seven, does that make up for everything that happened in the previous six games? Does that put it in that pantheon because the series finished strong? or because the game was kind of ugly and tight and the Warriors looked jittery and they were missing a bunch of shit and nobody scored a basket in the last 4.5 minutes until Kyrie hit that ridiculous three in Curry's face. Did it seem like the game was not, even though it was close, it was not as like, it was not as fun to watch?
No, it was because game sevens aren't supposed to be, they're never the most technically sound games because nobody wants to be that guy who makes that mistake and then blows the game. So it's always more jittery than the rest. It's just, no, nobody remembers, nobody's going to remember the first six games. It was just, oh, it was game seven and it was close. So what happened in the last 5 minutes? Well, you know, we'll ignore the fact that the entire fourth quarter flew by because nobody did anything. It was just, all you remember is just LeBron and Kyrie in the last 4 minutes of the game. That's it. The rest of the series, it's just, who cares? Oklahoma City, oh, they made it to the finals. They'll just be a little stat line.
But you are heavily critical of quality of play in today's NBA. I'm heavily critical of quality of play in the NBA in the 90s and in the 2000s. We've had some really dramatic games that were low scoring. I mean, one right off the bat was Bulls Jazz in 98. I think the final score was 87-86. Somewhere around there. Yeah. You know, the Lakers and the Kings, some of those games were not the highest scoring games. I can pinpoint a couple other games that were very low scoring but had a lot of moments. Did it feel like that with this series? It was sort of a turn back the clock where the Warriors were kind of sent back into that era where you had to play with defense first to win, and they just and because their offense was not reliable in the second half anymore, they just got a little they fell apart.
No, because as we mention every year and as everyone mentions, playoff basketball, you can't pull the same tricks you've been doing all season. So the games, you know, oh, it was a high-scoring game because it was 93-89. No, these teams, if it were the regular season, it would have been 115-110. Mm-hmm. If it were just like another, you know, one of the series games. So, you know, as each possession becomes bigger and you can't just, oh, let me run down. You're not going to be, you know, how many 40-foot threes were being shot up? None. Because, well, we need to make this possession sort of count. And we need to move the ball. Not, I'll just throw it up. Oh, it went in. Oh, I'm amazing. You didn't have any of that. So it's a different, you know, it's just as playoff. I'm not critical of it, but, you know. I'm not critical of the old-time games.
What I meant by that is that you're not necessarily a fan of a lot of the interchange of high-scoring games in the playoffs, meaning that you have high-quality games, which is a legitimate gripe. Where a lot of these games, just because people are scoring points, doesn't mean you're watching good basketball.
Yeah, it's just, well, nobody's playing defense, like an all-star game, if that's the case. But, you know, the old games, you have to look at a historical context. I think, you know, with, you know, Scottie Pippen and the whole...
Oh, go ahead. You know, keep going.
Scottie Pippen, let's compare the Warriors to the Bulls back then. Yeah, the games are way too totally different between now. Back then, it was pretty much like a rugby match. It was just lawlessness. And now it's...
Even when scoring was high in the early 90s, I mean, those games were rough and tumble at times, you know?
Exactly, and the players are different. It's like, well, you know, how would games be different now and then? It's like, well, Pippen, I'm pretty sure, you know, Draymond could just run Pippen up and down because he's bigger and could do the exact same thing. Jordan was a once-in-a-lifetime guy. LeBron is a once-in-a-lifetime guy. Well, you can't compare that, but it's just the look at the average, you know, let's say Pistons championships. You know, Lambeer would just be, his little bony frame would just be completely, you know, people would just bully him around because, well, now the players are bigger and stronger. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I look at the historical is in historical context. I can't compare then to now.
Okay, but we can go with historical context based on numbers, and the numbers is seven. That's a game seven. Let's kind of look back. 84 game seven was a blowout. I'm pretty sure you have some memory of it when, you know, Boston beat LA. I think it was by maybe like 15 or so points when Bird won the finals MVP. There was 88, like we talked about, Lakers, Pistons. It's a great, great game. Game six was probably more memorable, though. Knicks, Rockets in 94. Spurs versus the Pistons in 2005. Let's not talk about that game. And then there's – sorry, Terrell. But then my friend Terrell Robinson, a huge Spurs fan, one of his crowning achievements was the Spurs winning that Game 7, but I absolutely hate that game, and I hate that series, and I hope it never happened. And then and then there's the 2010 finals, which was Lakers-Boston Celtics, kind of like this one where it was a memorable series. There was a lot of big moments. There was a lot of big names, but the final game was just kind of – you know, this the Cavs-Warriors game was pretty – was played decently. That game was played badly, you know. That was just a badly, poorly played game on both sides, you know.
Yep.
And then 2013 was the one I watched right before this Game 7 went down last Sunday, and you know, just kind of give it an idea. Okay, well, this is the last Finals Game 7 LeBron had played in. Everybody else, this is their first one. I want to see how different LeBron is compared to then. The Heat won that one 95-88. So, like, where would you put that, like, kind of in the pantheon of the Game 7s that we know of the modern era? You know, there are other ones, like, in 1978, 1974, 1970, which was the Willis Reed game, 69, which was Bill Russell's last game. But let's kind of just talk about the modern era here. Like, where would you rank this one?
As far as storylines, I'd probably say this is maybe one or two.
But not as still not as good as Bulls Jazz 98.
No, because that wasn't storyline. That was just basketball, which is the basketball quality. Not that, you know, it wasn't that great in the end. But the fact that it was just, can the Warriors be the greatest team of all time? Can LeBron finally do what he wanted to do, you know, 12 years ago? It had the intrigue that we haven't had in ages.
The ratings were, for the Game 7, were the highest since the 1998 Game 6 on NBC. Would you consider that the most important game in the NBA since then, or would you kind of pinpoint something else, like maybe the breakup of Shaq and Kobe and the Lakers when the Pistons ran them off the court in five games, or maybe that Lakers-Celtics game in 2010, because that kind of closed out both of those eras for or those title runs for those two teams.
All because it has high ratings doesn't necessarily mean it's the best.
Exactly. So that's why I wanted to hand the question to you.
No, there were many other games, many other series that were better. It was just this one, like I said, had the intrigue that the hardcore fan's going to watch regardless of who it is. It's just, we got the, oh, well, it's a Game 7. Oh, I know Steph Curry. Oh, I know LeBron. Oh, he's back in Cleveland? Oh, good for him. Let's watch it.
More memorable moment. LeBron's block, chase down block on Andre Iguodala on that 2-on-1, or Kyrie Irving's 3 right up against Curry to break the tie and get the 92-89 score?
Well, they're both sort of trumped by LeBron's block on Curry in Game 6.
Okay, let's talk about that. Because I'm glad you dropped that one. Tell me why you like that one more.
Well, that's the one that sort of encapsulated the series, and that was the one, you know, most people are like, well, that's the turning point. That's when LeBron came the beast, and, you know, all the memes came out of Curry is now the sad Jordan, and...
Yeah, and Aisha Curry just don't fucking type anything, okay? I mean...
It's where we are now. It's what people do. I need to type before I think, and then, oh, I'm going to delete it.
I never type before I think.
That's why I don't tweet anymore. And if I do, I'll just delete them like after a week.
But let me say this, you know, that was right at the tail end of the final push to really encapsulate the blowout on Golden State in Game 6, which, oh, by the way, was not a terrible game either for LeBron. 41 points, 8 rebounds, 11 assists, 4 steals, and 3 blocks. Well, one of those 3 blocks, Curry tried the Rondo. I don't know what they call it. It's like the little fake dish, the Rondo play, where you kind of switch hands to try to fake them out so that you can try to get you can cheat on a layup, get an open layup. Well, LeBron didn't bite on it, and he just absolutely swatted it. He blocked Curry's shot like a multitude of times, like multiple times in this finals. There was one where Curry tried a freebie after the whistle, and LeBron blocked it just as a message. Well, in this Game 6, you know, where it looked like it was starting to sink in that we were going to have a Game 7 in Oakland. Curry tries the layup. LeBron swats it into the second row, you know, behind the basket. And LeBron says something to Curry, probably something like, get that shit out of here or something like that. And he's just got this look on his face. Like, if you could, if you could like try to get emotion off of a face, there was a whole lot of like emotion coming out of LeBron at that very moment, and Curry was trying to like front him, but he looked a little scared.
Yeah, it was just I couldn't believe that happened. That was supposed to go in. What's happening? That's not supposed to.
And the crowd, and the Cleveland crowd was on fire in that game six. I know a lot of people criticize LeBron teams for being, you know, kind of bandwagon fans that don't get super rowdy, but that Cleveland crowd was just, in Quicken Loans, was just on fire in game six. They were incredibly loud. I just remember that series, that first quarter when the pile on was on, where they got the 31-11 lead, where the crowd was just loud, very loud. And for Curry, did that kind of seem like a turning point for you, like in terms of like the kind of like the zeitgeist of what Curry and LeBron mean, where LeBron almost became this not a sympathetic figure, but somebody that you wanted to win, where you were like, you know what, I'm tired of hating on LeBron. And with Curry, there was almost this passive aggressiveness, like, whereas deep down, people kind of wanted to see the Warriors lose because they didn't want to see the Warriors have their cake and eat it too. And so LeBron jumped in and said, nope, this is still my league. I'm still the best. And I think people kind of like that.
People are quick to get tired of things, mm-hmm. especially if it's been overkilled by certain ESPNs. We loved Curry last year. Oh my God, can you believe this tiny guy is hitting all these shots? That's amazing. Okay, he's doing it again every year. Okay, now ESPN has this web, you know, they have their page dedicated to him.
I think it's called Nothing But Curry.
Nothing But Curry, and here's the Curry watch and Warriors. What now? It's like, okay, we're kind of sick of this now. We're kind of over it. Then just turns to, you know what? Fuck him. He just hits everything. why can't he miss it? Why can't he just be human?
Yeah.
And so, you know, people like building.
I'm sorry to cut you off. We got a sniff of that against the Thunder, you know, where people started kind of creeping up on the Twitter sphere with the crying Jordan. I mean, they were ready to kind of pile on Steph Curry for failing. To finish off that 73-9 regular season, which is an incredible accomplishment with a championship.
Yeah, you know, people like to build up superstars, and then once, well, now we need to report about, you know, everything Curry does every day. And now it's like, oh, we're tired of it, and we need to now tear him down and build somebody else up. And yeah, you mentioned it was the same thing happened in Oklahoma City, and now people have theirs, and LeBron goes from being the bad guy to, well, he went back to Cleveland. Okay, we forgive him.
Okay, here's a two-part question regarding the Finals MVP award, because that was kind of an interesting debate before the result of Game 7. If the Cavs had lost, would you have still given the Finals MVP to LeBron James?
Oh, he should have gotten it.
I think he should have gotten it last year still. I mean, I know Curry was more efficient in game in 2015 than he was this year, but I felt like LeBron was the best player on the court, and I thought that's what it was. If it means the best player on the winning team, then yeah, Curry should have won instead of Iguodala. Here's the other part to that question: if you were forced to give Finals MVP to anyone other than LeBron James in that series, who would have gotten it?
It probably would have been Irving, because the Warriors. It's like, let's say the Warriors won. Who would you give it to? Curry wasn't that great.
Tristan Thompson averaged a double-double in the finals, so there's that.
Yeah, which was amazing that he actually found the basket.
it was all alley-oops. Did you watch Game 6? It was all putbacks and alley-oops.
We should reward him for taking five shots?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm trying to think of a team. Oh, well, Iguodala didn't score a lot of points and won the MVP because of his defense, because of his team chemistry and all that stuff. And let me tell you this about, too, with Iguodala. There was really nothing he could do in that position with the block. I mean, because if you look at LeBron's hand on the left side, he was already prepared to block that one, too. So he knew that reverse might be coming, too. Like,
yep.
LeBron basically, as they say in sports, put him in jail. Like, there was nowhere he could go.
It was, you know, he willed his team, and these were the two highest priced teams there. They bought their way to the finals, and LeBron just willed his way. I guess that's all that could be said.
And here's just to finish off a couple of questions. Is this LeBron's greatest accomplishment, winning that one championship in Cleveland?
No.
Then what's his greatest accomplishment?
I would probably say winning the first one.
In Miami.
Because that required a lot of, you know, playing in the Olympics to let's do this and let's get together and to have people. This was just, you know, the copycat of let's do the big three 2.0. That was the first one. You need to convince Bosch. No, hey, leave your hero status in Toronto. Come, you know, come just be a role player with me and we'll all be friends and play. So I think that one's bigger. But that's just me.
Yeah, I would say this is it. I think this one means more than really any of the wins in Miami. Like, you could have compiled it up to maybe three or four title wins. I think this one means more. You know, I don't know why for me, but it just, maybe it's just the, you know, the sports torture of Cleveland and, you know, just getting rid of the curse that Cleveland's had for the last 52 years on pro sports championships. But I just think it means so much more. You know, this might be the year. You know, I heard a rumor that the Cubs are pretty good this year, too. So maybe this is the year that all of our really good sports curse storylines kind of go by the wayside. Was this a choke by the Golden State Warriors?
No, because Game 7, they put up a valiant effort. And if Green didn't get suspended, the
Warriors... But they had a 3-1 series lead and lost it. Which is exactly what the Thunder did.
I wouldn't say it was a choke because we've seen chokes, and that doesn't really – it's not the same level.
Okay. And that's kind of going to be putting the wrap-up on the NBA Finals for us. I mean, it was much more memorable than we thought it would be. I think a lot of people had the guess that the Warriors were probably going to win in 5 games. That's what it looked like. The Draymond Green suspension was clearly a turning point. Whether it was the reason why the Cavaliers won is up for debate. I'm sure it's a major reason why they were still competitive in the finals instead of going home after 5 games. But the Cavaliers defensively made some great adjustments. LeBron just went into takeover mode. Curry didn't respond well. And it just seems like when games get tight, offense is fantastic. 3-point shooting is fantastic. But it's not something you can hang your hat on every single game. And for elimination games, like they always say, it's a make-or-miss league, and the Golden State Warriors missed out on a repeat championship and capping off maybe the greatest singular season in NBA history. Would you hang that banner, the regular season championship banner?
Well, you have to. It's a banner's a banner. I mean, if the Colts can have...
Well, they were Western Conference champions, so you can hang that banner and put it in the little
subtitle.
Yeah, you
can put it below it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying you had the greatest regular season of all time.
Mm-hmm. There's no shame in it, but it's like, I mean, would you consider yourself a Patriots fan?
No.
Not at all.
No, but you still put up 16-0. You didn't win it. Yeah, everybody knows you. And then why put up Western Conference champions? Why put up Atlantic Division champions?
Is there a banner for 16-0 in the
I was there and I didn't even look at the banners.
Yeah.
I was there for soccer because it's why not?
Well, they got so many of these things like the Ring of Honor and the Field of Honor and the Chiefs Hall of Fame and all this different thing. So now, like, it's all kind of like for football, it's different because they don't always hang banners because they're not arenas, they're stadiums. So you don't even know where some of these things are. You know, like the Saints, theirs is like put right below the luxury suites. You know, on that barrier. You know, they decal it or they paint it there, and so everybody's got their different style, but. You know, just to kind of finish off with the Patriots, in 2007 when they went 16-0 and they lost in the Super Bowl to the Giants, is it something to be proud of? Or, because you and I as LSU fans went through this in 2011. They had this incredible – I mean, this is on a much lower level, okay? It's very like local sportsy of us to do that, but let's keep going with it. In 2011, they had probably their best team ever. You know, their best defense. Offensively, a struggle, obviously. Shitty quarterbacks. But for, they absolutely dominated the regular season. They even beat Alabama in a showdown game in the regular season. And then in the national championship, they just belly flopped against Alabama in a rematch. But for me, 2011 is still like a great memory, but it's always about that finish, about how it ended. And no matter how many great things and how many accomplishments they had throughout that season, you always think about that last game, the game where Alabama crushed them. I mean, I don't know about Patriots fans with the Giants. I'm pretty sure that that same mindset is there. Should that be the mindset for Warriors fans? You always think about LeBron blocking the shot and Kyrie making the three.
You know, in the terms of banners, you don't put it up next year, but you can put it up in a couple years. And that, like I said, if in that case, why are you putting up any banner unless you're a champion for anything? Oh, well, we were Western Conference. Well, you didn't win anything. We don't care.
Well, we're,
you know, you got, we're you got
taking,
swept.
We're taking a deeper dive here. We're talking about, you know, like the consciousness of the fan base. Like, how hard is this going to be to shake?
Well, for the Warriors fans.
It's assuaged by the championship victory in 2015 in a little
and, bit. Yeah, and the Warriors fans got too spoiled too quick because that bandwagon is pretty heavy there all of a sudden.
Oh yeah, they were like people. There were people like jumping on top of the outside part of the carriage. There, it was getting pretty bad.
Yeah, so they're all spoiled, and then they lost their home court. Everyone's like, oh, you know, you see them like crying. It's like, come on, you guys.
Well, it's okay. I think it's okay for fans to cry when their home team loses. I mean, a road win in the final. That's why I thought the Warriors had this, because like road wins in a game seven in the finals, it hasn't happened since '78 when the Bullets beat the Sonics. It rarely happens, rarely, you know. So when it happened, it was almost like it was almost very like 2004 Red Soxy, where it's like this is supposed to happen, like God wants this to happen. I know that goes to greater forces that we can't predict, but I mean, it just kind of felt that way.
The NBA is rigged. I don't know whether it's for money or ratings. The NBA is rigged.
Do you want to talk about the NBA draft?
Yes.
We had a long preview where we talked about basically all the prospects. There were a couple that we missed. I don't know how we missed. We wound up missing on Abdul Nader, you know, from Iowa State was one that we never name dropped. And then there was another one that went, that went a little higher than we thought he would, and we didn't really talk about him. Let me try to look at my little list here. Do you remember who it might have been? There was this one guy that we did not talk about. Oh, David Michonneau, a point guard from France, who went 39th to the Clippers. That was the one where I was like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, that was the one sort of like, well, point guards are point guards, and they rarely, you know, you don't usually draft point guards.
But that leads kind of to one of the main storylines of the draft, and that's the fact that they had 8 international prospects drafted into the first round, along with a handful that were drafted in the second round. A lot of people were kind of surprised by it, but then I guess the premise of it was kind of became more obvious that GMs are retaining rights to a lot of first round picks so that they don't have to pay them because of the new elevated rookie scale with the cap. Whereas it seemed like it would have been easier to sign these guys to low level rookie contracts because they're affordable deals under new cap. But I guess the mindset of these GMs went the other way.
Well, the mindset is well, we, you know, have all this money to spend. Why clog it up with two or three players who are, you know, we can use that money better. And it was a weird, crazy draft where it was the rumor mill was going crazy. And then when nothing really happened, there were hardly any trades this year. Usually it's.
Yeah. And the Celtics made a small move with the Grizzlies where they gave up the 31 and I believe it was the 35 so that they could just get rid of them is really what it was. And so the Grizzlies with those picks, they picked Deontay Davis out of Michigan State who tumbled out of the first round to a lot of people's surprise. And then they took a small forward named Rade Zagorak. I really hope I said his name right. One of the plenty of foreign players that were picked. Like in the second round, you had Zagorak, you had David Michonneau, Zuki from who was picked by the Rockets. Isaiah Cordinier, another French guard, he was drafted by the Hawks. Paul Zipser from Germany, we talked about him in the preview. He was drafted by the Bulls. Peter Cornelly was drafted very late by the Nuggets. Wayne, and then there was another Chinese center, Wang Jilin, was drafted by the Grizzlies. I highly doubt we'll ever even see him. And that was just the second round. There were eight in the first round.
Basically, well, for one, you know, only two players, one being Abdul Nader, who weren't invited to the combine and got picked. So basically that says,
if you don't get invited to the combine, stay in school. If you declare early.
That, and, you know, you mentioned, like, what are GMs doing? I think GMs are sort of learning that the one-and-done kids might burn them because they're not ready. And, you know, we've had, you know, we're on year three and year four of this movement, and a lot of them have already moved on to other teams. And you saw Charlotte was making, you know, Doran Lamb available, and they just gave him the deal. And
Jeremy Lamb.
It was just, you have teams don't want to spend time developing fundamentals that players should already have. And
yeah, let's talk about the lottery a little bit, which stopped at, I believe it was number 14 with the Bulls, right? Or because the Nuggets was number 15, but I don't remember if that was part of the lottery. I don't believe it was.
No, that was.
If it was, then I'm trying to remember who had that pick. And I think it may have been the Blazers. The Blazers may have, they either got the Blazers pick from number 19.
That was the Houston pick, wasn't it?
Okay, so you're right. So it ended at 14.
For Ty Lawson.
I can't even remember. I'm math dumb right now because the Nuggets had a few picks. Surprisingly, they kept really all of them. They didn't trade any of them. But let's just talk about the lottery. The top two went as predicted. Ben Simmons went number one with the Sixers. I mean, no surprise. He's got the highest upside. He's a 6'10" small forward. You could do so much with him. I really hope the Sixers are smart enough to kind of build around him and, you know, put good shooters there, good playmakers, you know, along with the size that they already have. Try to build something instead of just waiting for Superman. Maybe Simmons is their Superman. We don't know yet. The Lakers got Brandon Ingram. He's going to go with Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell for the future as they're coached by new head coach Luke Walton. Then it got kind of interesting with the Celtics, where there were rumors they were trying to move it desperately, try to get a star, maybe a Jimmy Butler, somebody like that. It didn't happen, so they went ahead and they picked Jaylen Brown, a small forward out of Cal.
Well, at the risk of sounding unpopular, I had always said anyone but Dunn. Yeah, he would have been part of a great bigger deal, but Jaylen Brown, when they say, you know, statistically rates out even lower than Austin Rivers did, I'm like, oh, that doesn't give me much hope. But, and then the rumor mill, well, they're going to trade with the Bulls. And then, well, apparently the Bulls wanted all four picks and Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart. Well, they only wanted Levine and the number five pick for Butler. I'm like, well, how do you go from wanting everything to wanting nothing for Minnesota? So,
yeah, I don't know how that deal didn't get done with Minnesota. The Wolves were ready to pull the trigger on that deal, and the Bulls were the ones that reneged. Whereas with the Boston Celtics said, I think we're giving up too much here.
Well, the thing is, the Bulls probably wanted, like, well, we're not shopping him, but if there's somebody who's going to give us that, you know, proverbial Herschel Walker trade, well, we have to take it. So be like, okay, we want Levine. We want, you know, three first rounders. Mm-hmm. We want Dang, and we want, you know, Shabazz Muhammad and Tyus Jones. Well, okay, now it's sort of like, well, we're going to pick apart our entire bench.
Yeah, now it looks like we're getting fleeced. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you're not giving up Wiggins.
And to your credit for Gar Foreman and any of those GMs, that's their job. Your job is to get the best deal. You know, a lot of people criticize the Serge Ibaka trade on both sides because it was an even deal. But the problem is for both those teams is that it was an even deal. Neither team really got better.
Well, it was one of those. Did Oklahoma City just totally rip off Orlando? How can Orlando give that much up? Then it's just like, well, now Oklahoma City doesn't really, you know, they lost a major cog.
Yeah, they lost. They lost a big part of the. Well, Danny LaRue, who's really who I think works for Real GM, and he does like he co-hosts a podcast with Nate Duncan that I really like, and Danny LaRue called it the Megadeth lineup when they played the Warriors. You know, now a different lineup worked with Canner and Adams against the Spurs, but the Megadeth lineup was I believe it was Russell Westbrook, Andre Robertson, Kevin Durant. Adams and Serge Ibaka, and Ibaka was a nightmare against the Warriors, and now you're breaking that up. So now you're thinking, okay, how do we beat the Warriors? Well, let's trade one of the most important parts of our of that lineup that gave the Warriors problems, which seems counterintuitive.
You got to look towards the future, and you know Deion Waiters wasn't, and then as good as Adams and Adams was, well, you still need shooting to get you in it, and you, I don't know, it was one of those, it was a big deal, and but that was the only one, and I, you know, I don't want to say Orlando got a good deal, because so far Hennigan hasn't made a good trade. I don't know how long.
I think that was a bad deal, because I don't know, Serge Ibaka is going to be there for 1 year, it'll be a contract year, he'll play his ass off, but there's no guarantee he'll stay in Orlando. I don't know how he fits with Nikola Vucevic and Tobias, and Aaron Gordon. You know, you might have to be forced to either play Gordon at the three, which he's not, or take him off the bench, which is exactly where he was when we started the season when Tobias Harris was there. You know, and the reason why you traded Tobias Harris was so that you could play more of Aaron Gordon. Now you can't because you got Ibaka. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I don't know if it makes sense because, well, for one, you traded your shooter, and so now you're going to move Fournier there. Who? So who's going to be your scorer? They don't really have one now. But at the other side, you got Ibaka, you got Gordon, you got Hizanja. And you got Vogel, who's going to be coaching them. So that gives you a little more hope than...
And Vogel, and you know, I heard this point too. Vogel is renowned for playing two bigs in the starting lineup. He had Hibbert and West. He liked to play a lot of Ian Mahinmi with Miles Turner. So it would not be surprising if we saw Vucevic kind of in tandem as starters with Ibaka. I just worry about what they do with Gordon and Azania. You know, Elfrid Payton is clearly the guy there now that the other guard who they were thinking about trying to make a point guard, Oladipo, is now off to Oklahoma City. The other part, on the other side, the only advantage I would see for Oklahoma City with Oladipo being there is that defensively he's very good, so he can work with Russell Westbrook to kind of seal off guards, you know, defensively in the backcourt. They'll be very hard to get through. And then it also makes Deion Waiters slightly expendable, even though Waiters and Oladipo are very different players.
Oh, no, he is completely gone.
It depends on an offer sheet, though. There would have to be an offer sheet to do it.
Somebody will give him an offer sheet. There'll be some team. Look at what Portland did. They said we need to target young players right out of their rookie deal who still have potential and might have just been in the bad situations. And as much as, you know, I don't like Deion Waiters or anything, he seemed to sort of towards the end of this season sort of get it that he can't be the man.
He played really well against the Spurs. I'm not sure what clicked, but he was giving the Spurs a lot of problems in that second round of the playoffs. I don't know. He played very efficiently, just very efficiently. You know,
it's just the, you know, I'm a starter, I'm the man. And when I think you sort of, you know, take some humility and be humble and just realize, look, I'm just going to be a piece. You know, your career goes a lot further.
Yeah. Another part of that deal is that with the trade, the Thunder wound up getting that 11th pick that the Magic had, and they picked Domantas Sabonis. You know, everybody killed them for the James Harden deal. It still looks like a bad deal on paper, but they did get Steven Adams with one of those picks, you know, a year later. So, you know, we'll see if that works out with Sabonis. I don't know if he'll be able to provide immediately. One of the other trades that was affected by in the lottery was that the Utah Jazz traded their 12th pick to the Hawks, but this was part of a three-way deal that involved the Jazz, the Hawks, and the Indiana Pacers, but there were big names involved. Jeff Teague is going to the Pacers. He's likely to sign an extension. That was probably part of the transaction before the agreement was even made. The Jazz got George Hill, who has been playing in Indiana since they traded him for Kawhi Leonard. And then there's the Hawks, who got this pick, and they picked Torian Prince, a small forward. They got another small forward later in that first round in DeAndre Bembry. Some people criticize that move. I kind of like it because they're point forwards, and you'll be able to play them in case Kent Bazemore it leaves in free agency, because you don't want to get burned again by losing another small forward in free agency. So what did you kind of think of it on all three sides?
That pick, well, Indiana has now become the most boring team of all time.
Yeah, they also got Thad Young, which allowed the Nets to get back into the draft with that pick.
With Caris LeVert.
Yeah, they picked Caris LeVert. He's got a lot of
foot
problems. 5-foot
surgeries.
But he's a very tall player who can play point guard. Like he's a 6'6" point guard.
It was like McCullough last year. You get players who had injuries, but if they didn't have injuries, they would have been way higher.
Lottery for sure would have Caris LeVert if he was healthy. I agree.
So, but Indiana's just going to be that team. I don't even know how I'm going to do, you know, season three. It's just like, let's talk the Pacers. Let's not. No. Let's just.
So you don't think they got better?
I don't think they got better, for one, by getting rid of Vogel. And then the Thaddeus Young. Yeah, that's good. But now, so what does that do with your Paul George as a four thing? That sort of slams that door shut.
Well, now he has to play the three, which is like his like natural position, you know.
Teague makes him better, but you still have no shooter because Monta Ellis sort of has, you know, we knew he peaked, but now we could see he's sort of declining.
And George Hill was a good shooter who just had a bad season, you know.
Yeah, he had a bad season, and you know, two years ago they were picked up by Stuckey, who had, you know, an amazing, and now it's just like, well, oh, he went back to being crappy. So you still have shooting issues. So they just became unexciting. Atlanta is going for I think they're expecting Bazemore to leave.
Mm-hmm. I think they're going to give as much money as they can to keep Al Horford, and if that means they have to go past $25 million per year, they'll do it. You know, I think they're just all in to keep Horford and Millsap together.
I don't know if Horford wants that, but that's what they're willing to say. We're gone with Bazemore, and Korver is done, but still, you know, it's Schroeder's game now, and who's the two there now?
Did you see the tweet by Dennis Schroeder where he basically was saying, oh, thanks for this opportunity, with a picture of himself after Teague was traded? It was basically a big fuck you to Jeff Teague.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, ill will there, almost on a Reggie Jackson, Russell Westbrook level.
This is Reggie Jackson all over again.
I love NBA rivalries. We need more of them. We need more bitterness. You know, like that's why when LeBron did that with Curry, I kind of liked it. I'm like, oh, good. They're not helping each other up, kissing and hugging each other. Let's get mad. You know, this is for a championship, man.
Yes, let's have some attitude in there. So yeah. That's a good.
Yeah, Vince Russo approves of this. Winners and losers, just in general. You know, let's get. You know, we could talk about some of the things with the lottery that kind of confused us, like the Kings taking Georgis Papagiannis, a center out of Greece, when you already had DeMarcus Cousins at center, and then Thon Maker going to the Bucks. We knew the Bucks were going to go weird. We didn't think they would take Thon Maker. And then the Suns trading their later picks in the first round so they can get back into the lottery again. And with the eighth pick, they took Marquese Chriss, which I thought was pretty, pretty good. They got Chriss and Dragan Bender. But just kind of give me your overall of, like, kind of winners and losers, guys, teams that you liked.
For one, losers, obviously Sacramento, who just showed they don't really know what they're doing. Malachi Richardson, and who was there?
Scal Labissiere.
Scal might turn out good, but you're just saying, if they don't trade Cousins this year, I don't know, because nobody's going to give them much of an offer next year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this year you can pry him away. Next year everybody's going to say, well, we know he's leaving, so we're not going to trade for him.
And now the pressure's on to be better than the Sixers. But now the Sixers are going to probably be bad again. Because here's the thing. And for me, that's why I thought the Sixers were kind of sort of losers, because with the later picks, they picked Timothy Luwawu and Furkan Korkmaz, there's a good chance that neither of them will be coming over.
Well, that's – everyone's like, the Sixers are winners. Trust the process. Number one –
the process is dead.
You couldn't get anything for Noel or Okafor. You tried to shop them to get the number 3 or number 5, and nobody wanted them. So how good is your process if the two people you drafted nobody wants and can't play together? This was the year we need players who can play. Let's take two foreign guys who might be good. We don't know if they're going to be over this year. Even if they do, they probably won't be ready for this. They won't be super effective this year.
Would you have had a better opinion for Philly if they'd have been able to reach up at 3 or 4 and get a guy like Chris Dunn, who was clearly the best point guard of the crop?
Even if they didn't get Chris Dunn, even at 22 or 15, you get, you know, Cousin DeShante, or you get, you know, Malachi or Bembry. You get players who can come in and actually play right now, as opposed to, well, we don't know if he's coming over this year. We don't know his contract situation. They need to get, you know, the first thing both years, well, need to get stronger. Oh, well, this, okay, Philly, wait till next year in your pick. You have Ben Simmons. Hopefully he could be a 3 and a lot of 4s and Ish Smith.
Let me give you the ones that I kind of looked at as sort of question marks. There's some that were just nice fits, like, you know, Jamal Murray with the Nuggets, Jaka Pertl with the Raptors, I think is a really good fit. Wade Baldwin with the Grizzlies, even if though he's a lower valued point guard compared to Chris Dunn, you needed a point guard in case Mike Conley leaves, which it's looking more and more likely. And then there was a couple ones in the second round I like for value, but let's just kind of talk about the weird ones, the ones that I think you might have some interest talking about. Buddy Hield with the Pelicans.
You ready for the Buddy and Sheik show?
Well, Chick Diallo, is they traded their... I was wondering, what are they going to do with those 39th and 40th picks? Well, they bundled them together, they moved up to 33, and they got Chick Diallo. He was the MVP of the Jordan Brand Classic. But then again, so was Cliff Alexander the year before that. So we'll see how Chick works out. Played 7.5 minutes at Kansas. Energy guy, but he doesn't run the floor like super great. Shot blocker, high energy, long wingspan. I just hope it works out. Buddy Hield, he's basically the replacement for Eric Gordon. You know, he's like I hate to even say it, he's like a lesser version of Eric Gordon. So I wish we had Jamal Murray instead, but beggars can't be choosers. Okay. Or maybe we can be choosers.
Other losers, I would say Phoenix. You'd mentioned Chris. Yay, he has potential. Bender, yay, he has potential. Aren't they the same real position and player? And
then they took Tyler Ulis, who I would love on any team. But the one thing is, they didn't really need a point guard, and even if they trade one of those guys, they didn't need a point guard.
How many just don't draft a point guard from Kentucky? Don't draft a point guard.
And they drafted a point guard.
There's a reason bad teams stay bad.
I really like Tyler Ulis, but I have sincere doubts that he is going to make it because of how small he is. That's going to be really, really hard for him. You know,
Sacramento.
Isaiah Thomas was a scorer. I mean, Ulis is a facilitator.
San Antonio completely. They are the winners of the draft.
By getting DeJounte Murray from Washington?
And allow it, you know, he'll have a couple years to develop. Let's say he went to Philly. Well, we need you to play now. Well, I don't really know how to play.
look at Kyle Anderson. He hasn't worked out beautifully yet, you know.
But he's developing. They're given, he's had time. Is he being an all-star now? No, but he's having time to develop in the system as opposed to get out there and play.
What about the Nuggets? Just looking at the class, they get Jamal Murray at 7. They get Malik Beasley at 19, who's also a shooter. So they double down on shooting, which they desperately needed. And at 15, they got Juan Hernan Gomez, who a lot of people liked as one of the better foreign prospects of the class. I thought that was a very good haul. And they didn't even have to move to get him.
Yep. And, you know, they it's one of those teams, if they, whoever they take from internationally, be like, okay, they got their scout. They get, you know, you mentioned they got Petr Korneliev.
Who I don't think we're going to see this year, you know.
But it's just one of those, whoever they take a flyer on, well, maybe we should do it. Brooklyn not having a pick going into it, getting Isaiah Whitehead, you know, the hometown boy, that sort of a upside potential.
Well, they had a second round pick, but they traded to get a little higher so that they could get Whitehead. But they didn't give up much to do it. And with that pick at 55, the Jazz got Marcus Paige from North Carolina.
Golden State getting Patrick McCaw, who is he just signed. I'll sign a 2-year minimum. Get me in right now. I don't. Yes, I'll sign. So you
is
know that.
Is he insurance in case Leandro Barbosa doesn't come back?
Well, Barbosa's old and
exactly. Did you see poor Barbosa? I think it was game 7. Did you see poor Barbosa get his shot blocked by LeBron? That was like YMCA bad. I mean, Barbosa was killing him with corner threes, you know, leaking out in transition. But when he attacked the basket and LeBron just swatted, it was like one of those, okay, Barbosa can't help us, and Kerr yanked him. I don't think we saw him again after that.
Yep, that was other winners of the draft.
Did you like the Clippers getting Diamond Stone and Bryce Johnson?
Bryce Johnson's a...
He's a pogo stick.
He is a pogo stick, but you need some front court, you know. You need some depth out there. Obviously, you give up, you get rid of J.J. Redick, you bring in Brandon Wright, and then you don't really address backs unless they have somebody targeted for free agency. Mm-hmm. They lost a good deal of shooting to get some front court depth, which obviously they had none.
Mm-hmm.
If you know Luke Mbah-Mute is sort of he was your starting small forward and backup power forward. Not good.
And let's talk about, I mean, just kind of more general ones. I was surprised George Niang got drafted, but it was a pleasant surprise. I thought he was a really good scoring forward, just not very athletic. He went to the Pacers. Ben Bentel, Justin Rosero's boy, who was a teammate of Chris Dunn's, he went to your Celtics. Another guy who went to the Celtics, who I'm a champion of, is Demetrius Jackson. So, I mean, let me tell you this. I cannot wait to watch the Celtics D-League and Summer League teams. They are going to be great.
The Summer League team of the D-League.
They're going to have, like, James Young, maybe. And they're going to have, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, RJ Hunter, Jordan Mickey. They're going to be a great Summer League team.
Their Summer League team should go undefeated, but Bentel and Jackson are not going to be on the D-League team because that means they got roster spots and they don't really have any to give out as long as you have James Young hogging up a spot doing nothing. So, you know, Jackson, he'll be off to Europe. Bentel, he has a better, you know, since he's, you know, not American, he has an easier way of getting around in Europe and picking his teams as opposed to, you know, the American guy. Well, okay, now, you know, I might have to play in the Australian League, might have to go somewhere, but they, you know, what do you do with 8 picks? You don't have 8 spots, so you just draft international and you get, you know, if Jaylen Brown can become the player you think he is, it'll be good. If not, well, then it was just a 2-player draft, and we'll see how Bender did.
Let's talk about the free agency players here and what they did in the draft, even if on a smaller level. The Thunder got Sabonis in that trade. We talked about that already. They got Daniel Hamilton. I don't know if we'll see Daniel Hamilton a lot. You know, Kevin Durant, I think, is going to stay in Oklahoma City at least for another season. The Cavaliers bought a pick, and they got Kay Felder from Oakland. I think he's insurance in case Matthew Dellavedova leaves in free agency.
Well, that just shows Dellavedova is just not – he's not going to do anything. He's not You know, he was a free agent last year and he came back.
Yeah, the Pistons, who, you know, got into the first round for the first time in years and lost. They got Michael Gabinejay from Syracuse with their first round pick. They got Henry Ellenson from Marquette. I think they're both fits, good fits. They're good. One can steal the ball. The other one's a decent rebounder who can shoot threes. I like them for Stan Van Gundy. We'll see what defensively. Ellenson's got a lot of work, so we'll see what they can do there. The Blazers got Jake Lehman from Maryland. The Houston Rockets got Zuki, which is we talked about earlier. You talked about the Warriors getting Patrick McCaw. And I'm looking here. I mean, the Grizzlies made a bunch of picks, but we don't really know what we're going to see out of the Grizzlies after this offseason, where it's possible they might move Zach Randolph. They you know, Tony Allen might be washed up. Mike Conley might be gone. You talked about the Spurs with DeJounte Murray already. We talked about the Celtics. The only guy we didn't mention that the Celtics got was they got one of those Croatian big men, Ante Zizic. And the word is that there's a chance he will come over. The one that is definitely coming over is Avika Zubac with the Lakers. He is definitely coming over.
Oh, yeah, because the Lakers they need bodies.
They need something. I mean, and then also the Celtics got Gershon Yubisili, I think. Yubisili?
Is that Yubisili.
Yeah, he's kind of like a stretch four French big man. So we'll see there. The Bulls got Denzel Valentine. The Bulls made the trade with Derrick Rose. where they finally let him go. He went to the Knicks in exchange for Jerian Grant, Jose Calderon. I'm missing another guy. Was it Justin Holiday, Drew's brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then a second round pick. And then they almost traded Jimmy Butler. So it looked like the Bulls were about to blow it all up, and they changed their mind. So Valentine, I think he'll play about as soon as he possibly can, but we'll see. But overall, not the most interesting draft. I think 2017's is going to be fascinating because that cap rises again. You'll be able to – people will be taking – be more willing to take risks with American players, if you ask me. And the American players this year or next year are so much better, like across the board. I don't just necessarily mean at the top because Ben Simmons could be a superstar. But, I mean, you go into the lottery – you dip into the lottery for 2017, and we talked about it at the tail end of our draft preview. Guys like Harry Giles and Jason Tatum and Josh Jackson, Dennis Smith Jr., Bam Adebayo. I mean, they have got a ton of guys that are probably going to be really good NBA players. So I think a lot of people were holding out. Speaking of holding out, let's talk about free agency. Is this going to be a very, very long staring contest with some of these signings?
I hope not.
Or you think there's going to be some serious spending just because of the numbers alone?
It's just going to be crazy deal after crazy deal, like crazy deal. You know, it's all, well, who are the big names? Wade, LeBron, Durant, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I agree with you.
There's a big drop off. And once you start seeing, you know, the prize will really be Mike Conley.
Well, the point guards have got everybody over a barrel because the point guard class after Conley and Rondo is just god awful. But these guys are going to be overvalued because teams need point guards. You know, everybody needs shooters or scoring point guards. So people are going to reach to get a guy like a Matthew Dellavedova, an Ish Smith, a Brandon Jennings even. There's really not a lot there. But every team needs a good point guard or at least a good backup. So there's a very good chance that they'll be overpaid. I anticipate a lot of those small forwards like Harrison Barnes, Nick Batum, even Chandler Parsons with his knee problems, Solomon Hill, Damari Carroll, if he opts out, I think all those guys are going to get overpaid.
Well, that's the thing is none of them are gonna move the needle for anything. Nobody says, oh man, if we just get Solomon Hill, that'll put us into contention.
Yeah, the ones that kind of people are staring down, because there is a good chance that they'll be going somewhere else, is in the center and power forward position. And it's really Pau Gasol, Hassan Whiteside, Bismack Biyombo, and Dwight Howard. I think a lot of people are interested in where they're going to go because there's a good chance that all those players are going to be available on the open market.
And Noah, too, is the...
Yeah, but Noah's injuries are such a concern. Like, what can he really provide? You don't want like something like when Brandon Roy went to the Timberwolves and he had nothing left. And he like literally retired like a month later, you know.
Yeah, but that's just you get him on a 2-year deal. We're not saying max him out 5 years. That's the backup short term plan. Mm-hmm. The problem is, you know, you had like the Knicks who gave, you know, Amari a 5-year deal. Well, everybody knew year 4 and 5 would be disastrous.
Let me ask you this, and I'm not going to talk about too much about their individual cap space for the teams because everybody's got cap space. Some more, some less. I'll mention if it's an excessive or copious amount, I'll kind of mention as an aside, but we'll play a game called Pace or Space. Pace meaning for the free agency session that you think that this team that I'll give you is going to go after it and try to fill up that cap space as soon as they can or try to make a big move. And then space, and you can choose space for a team if you think that they're just going to wait it out with their cap space. Just try to meet the cap basement, which I believe is around like 84 million, I believe. And then see if they can wait it out until 2017, which has a much better free agency class to try to spend that money. But here we go. The Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, that's the worst. I thought you'd give me some nice little softballs first, but I have no idea what they can do. If Connolly leaves, I would just, you sort of have to blow it up.
Mm-hmm. So space, which is essentially what you're saying. If you start over, you're not spending the money. Kind of like
it's Lakers. Even below space. It's just, well, what's Randolph's market? We got Gasol. Let's try to get people around him and rebuild in a year or two. Mm-hmm. It's not even space. It's just we got nothing on that team and. Mm-hmm. We need to change everything.
Yeah, because, well, not just that. You know, they already have Marc Gasol signed through for a long time. Randolph's at the end of his deal. I don't know how much time Tony Allen has left. So they'll have a lot of space to use. I just don't know if they'll be able to use it this summer. So I agree with you there. The Dallas Mavericks. They have a lot of cap space.
They always spend.
Yeah, but this time they have the cap space to get two guys. Specifically if they let Chandler Parsons depart.
They will spend this year. They always – I don't think they know how to save money.
Well, they have saved money. It's because the free agents that they've targeted don't go there. That's the problem. Like, they were anticipated at right around 30 mil, like something over the 30 mil in cap space. But if they lose, but if they shed Parsons and he goes somewhere else, that bumps up to like 45 million potentially. You know, so they got money to spend. I mean, I think their biggest target will be Dwight Howard. I think Cuban's just gotten an infatuation with needing a big man, and they'll go with Dwight. The Lakers, who have nothing but cap space now that Kobe Bryant's contract is gone.
I don't think they're gonna space because they need too many bodies. Their image is damaged, so they need to get need bodies. I don't know.
Here's the thing. This is the weird one. This is the one occasion where you can go pace and space because they could spend $25 million per year in cap space on a guy and still be well under. You know,
they say, you know, they're going all in on Whiteside. Okay, so you replaced one center with another one. What about all the other positions you have nobody for?
This one we might be forced to make the right one, the Raptors, because they have very little cap space.
I don't know what they just need to sort of stay healthy and see what they have. I don't think they can either pace or space because the year was sort of, it was what it was because Carroll got injured for the most part and he was just 70% when he came back. So we need to see what he can give.
The New York Knicks.
Oh, they're going to buy.
I don't know. That team has never done well with the eyeballs on them. You know, ever since Pat Riley left, every time they go for a big move, it backfires.
Well, the problem is you can't have, you know, we've already mentioned Carmelo is just getting older and he doesn't have 3-4 years left in him.
Mm-hmm.
At this superstar
so
level.
So now the urgency's kicking in. Okay, we have Carmelo, but we don't have him much longer as an elite player. We'll see if he kind of like dials back into that with the Olympics in Rio. Derrick Rose, we know he's on one more year at about 20-plus million. Then you go after a big man, maybe a Dwight Howard, maybe an Hassan Whiteside, maybe a Pau Gasol, somebody like that. I have my reservations about going for broke like that because it kind of is going for broke. But
it's the Knicks. It's what they do.
Oh, he gossam. The Washington Wizards. After their starting lineup, they've got a lot of holes to fill. And the Durant stuff is starting to cool off.
Well, that's the problem is they have literally too many holes to fill. So you can't go all out and spend on big free agents when you need literally like 10 bodies in there.
It'll be a little bit like the Knicks last year where they got a Derek Williams here, an Aaron Aflalo there, a Robin Lopez there.
Yep, that's what they need to do, but, you know, that chips away at your cap space, so...
By the way, I think one of the worst things the Knicks did in that trade was trading Robin Lopez's $13 million contract. That's a sure center who can block shots, and that's a value contract in about 2 years, and you let it go.
Well, it's a value contract now, considering
they let it slip to the Bulls for Derek freaking Rose.
You lose Gasol, you're losing Noah, all you have is Mitch Rodick there, and no other front court.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, well, we'll give you a starting center for Derrick Rose.
Dumb.
Yeah? Yeah, really?
That was the part of the deal that I forgot to mention on the Derrick Rose was Robin.
You have to take Jose Calderon. Yeah. But he's expiring this year, right?
And, you know, Calderon is friends, very good friends with Pau Gasol. They'll play together in the Olympics again. Maybe he can convince Pau to come back again.
I doubt that.
And then the last one I see, and I'm going to save the best for last for you, your Boston Celtics.
Oh, they got no... I don't know who they can spend it on. They're going to go for...
I think it's very wait and see. I get a very wait and see approach with the Boston Celtics.
The thing is, they, you know, the fans were all, like, I was, you know, listening to the draft party they had at the Garden, and, mm-hmm. you know, all you heard is the announcer say, like, yeah, the fans are just angry now.
I was watching this magic moment. They had a draft party in the old arena. You know, you remember the one that had the little lights below the luxury suites or whatever it was?
Yeah.
You remember that? And they picked Anthony Hardaway. They traded Chris Webber to get Anthony Hardaway because they wanted Anthony Hardaway instead. And the fans booed Anthony Hardaway. They booed Pat Williams out of the building. I mean, everybody – they booed Porzingis. They booed Porzingis in New York.
Well, they – you know, you boo what you don't know because for some reason, if it's not, well, an all-star, it's not the one guy we thought we're going to get. We'll just boo him.
But it does make sense. You need a smaller – Or you know, a 6'7" small forward is a decent replacement for Evan Turner if Evan Turner leaves. It's not really a bad choice.
That was the first thing I said. Is like, oh my, Turner's gone. They're gonna let him go to the Knicks.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's you know, I see.
And
that.
All the other ones were internationals, which to me was fine because they were already over. We've talked about this millions of times. They're already overloaded with their man to man roster. You know, there's how many guys can you shove off to the D League and try to move up because you got so much in front of them. The only thing you could do is shed guys like Amir Johnson by cutting his $12 million option and letting Jared Sullinger leave as a restricted free agent and maybe not keep Jonas Jerebko. I mean, the only way you can move up those other guys that you drafted if they were ready is to cut guys that are already producing for you. So why do that? Why kick yourself into rebuilding mode when you could try to win right away and just stockpile prospects? I don't mind it.
Well, that's the thing is I understand you're not going to win the championship this year or next year. You have to wait. You have to wait till LeBron is past his prime. And then the Golden State thing eventually will start falling apart. And okay, well, you position yourself to be that next wave, but it's just, You don't rile up your fan base and then just, well, we didn't do anything. And last year's big free agent sign, like you said, was Amir Johnson. And it's just like, well, what do we have for this year? Well, we could re-sign Sullinger. Yeah, but we don't like him.
Mm-hmm. And look how smart it was getting that team option on Amir Johnson. Because look at the other side of going in on a big man for 3 or 4 years. Greg Monroe with the Milwaukee Bucks. And now look what the Bucks are doing. They're desperately trying to trade Greg Monroe because he was a bad fit. So it is okay to kind of cut ties if you can, you know, but you got to make smart decisions. You don't want to cut a guy like Amir Johnson just because, oh, we got this guy and we got this guy and we want to get him ready. We want to get him into the fold as soon as possible. No, you get him ready. You get him in there when they're physically and mentally prepared to produce for you. You know, now Danny Ainge is a guy that always wants a star. You know, he hasn't gotten one yet. I don't know if the temptation will be great enough that if the opportunity is ripe in free agency that he tries to pluck one. I hope he doesn't because I think if he waits out another year, he's got a better chance of getting a star. But we'll see. You know, but that's going to be kind of finishing up. Do you have any kind of comments before we – like give me one thing in free agency that we might be talking about when we reconvene.
Free agency, you're going to see a lot of overpayments. You're going to see, you know, it's going to be Bismack's going to, like they said, getting $15 million. He's going to be probably making more than almost everybody on the roster. And he's still technically a backup. And
I'll give you one prediction. There'll be 2 point guards that get the kind of salaries that will make people's eyes come out of their heads.
Oh, well, Connolly is going to get maxed.
Well,
out.
I'm not talking about Connolly. I'm talking about below him.
Rondo is going to get overpaid, but is he, you know, it's just, he's not bad. He's talented. It's just, he's still a head case and he's too old to be a head case.
Yeah. Cause it's a guard oriented league now. And there are going to be some guards that get like Alan Crabb. Like I got a feeling he's going to get heavily overpaid. Heavily. That's one example.
you know, maybe Harrison Barnes gets a max deal, but...
Oh, yeah, that's the one with the Pelicans. Us Pelicans fans are already scared to death that Dell Demps is already lining up the offer sheet for Harrison Barnes for $25 million a year. We're already scared.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a nice little end to Season 2 here.
Yes, Season 2 is complete. I guess we can try to put some bonus features in there for another episode, huh? We'll be coming back. You know, there's things in the... That's the thing that's fun about basketball. It never really stops. You know, it just kind of takes a break. You know, there's always something to talk about with the stuff.
Well, you know, we'll be back in a few weeks with free agency recap. We'll be talking Olympics, Summer League. Then comes, you know, late summer. We got previews, and then...
And then the ball will be back rolling again, you know?
Exactly.
But no, it was a very fun season, Adam Murray.
It's good. We got picked up for Season 3.
Well, I don't know about that. That option is still there for Justin Rosero. And Brad Woodling, I think, is the other one. You know, we might have to make another pitch, you know? It's one of those ones where the option could be or couldn't be picked up. So we'll have to see.
Fine. We'll just go small ball this year.
On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We'll see you all.